Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is indeed Thursday, April 13th. We're moving on, I guess, you know. April 18th is coming up. So for those of you, I almost forgot. So I actually, I hope I can lodge in the extension before the 18th or...
What are you even talking about?
Taxes. Didn't I say taxes?
No. Oh, but I forgot all about taxes, too. Every time you remind me,
she's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, I should have said taxes.
It's only because I've been making Seder, and I'm so tired, and I forgot all about taxes. Man, that's a bummer. I got to go do that.
Right. So you made Seder last night?
I'm making Seder for tonight because my friends were available.
Okay.
And they're all non-Jewish.
So is this a new thing to do it whenever
whenever they're available. Absolutely. None of my friends are available. And they're not Jewish. So okay, they're all going to learn about the Passover story, and they're going to have their matzo ball soup and their
stupid
brisket that took 50 hours to make.
Really?
God.
But have you at least been enjoying the process?
I have. I can't believe I'm saying it so mean. I love it, but I didn't realize why my mom gets so mean. And so I call her a million times, and she goes, now you know why I get so bitchy.
Right, huh? Yeah. That's a lot of work for a lot of people. God, you know?
Yeah, eight people.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that'll be nice.
Yeah, so we went to Target and got some nice tablecloths. And we were using the good wedding china for the first time.
Yeah.
We pulled it out of the box. We've never used it.
That's cool.
Ever.
And you'll be doing a mitzvah by exposing non-Jews.
Exactly.
To these
we have a really cool Haggadah that's very like, it's okay if you're Christian or Buddhist or whatever. You're also maybe a child and you don't know what it is. My mom got my husband a children's Haggadah the first time that was like, welcome to being a Jew. And he was like, thank you, Judy. But now he's making charoset. It's very
really?
Good.
Really? Yes, wow, yeah. People are wondering, what the hell are they talking about?
I know, it's Passover Seder,
and
guys.
Sorry. Yeah, but that's the thing, is that we do have a lot of Jewish people here in L.A., so these people will understand. But
yeah.
And I'm sure people around the world, most people know what the hell we're talking about.
Yeah,
you know?
It's the fun Seder you do with the plagues, and it's about freedom and spring.
Right, and freedom and delivery from slavery and stuff. So there you go. We do have a special guest in the studio. He'll Woo-hoo. Be joining us in just a moment. This is breaking news. The U.S. just dropped the largest non-nuclear bomb in Afghanistan. This is like breaking news right now. We dropped a bomb on ISIS there.
Oh, I just
to destroy their tunnels and stuff, because I guess there were some bombings in Kabul yesterday.
Yeah, Afghanistan is still like a hotbed of
yes, it
of,
is.
Places. Wow, that's very interesting.
I know. So they call that bomb the Moab, which stands for something, but it also stands for the mother of all bombs. So they give it this nickname.
Wow.
Yeah.
Jeez.
So it's so but you know, who knows what's going on.
Yeah.
Anyway,
things are always changing and moving, and you can see this. It's going to be. I think if you thought this was not going to be a war administration or a strong, you know, fighting administration, you're wrong. It's going to be, you know.
It's going to be.
He said he would blow the shit out of their families. Like, yeah, this guy
oh
is.
Oh my God.
So, So last night he went on and talked about. He said bombing Iraq, but he meant Syria. And he discussed his chocolate cake piece of dessert that went on and on. And if you heard this, it was the most bizarre thing I've ever heard. He was like, "We were having this piece of cake with the president of China, prime minister of China, and he was like, it was beautiful, this cake. It was the best piece of chocolate cake you've ever seen. Anyone's ever seen." And the guy's like, okay. He was like, it was dessert, you see. And they're like, we got it. Enough about the fucking cake. Like, tell us what. And he was like, and then we dropped 59 Tomahawk missiles in Iraq. And then there was the silence, and the reporter goes, I think you mean Syria. And he was like, yes. And that cake was just beautiful. So, wow. That's interesting. Wow.
Yeah.
Breaking news, guys.
Yeah. A lot of stuff happening. Did you hear about this judge that was found in the Hudson dead?
Yes.
Wow.
A black Muslim, the first black Muslim woman judge, could not be more of a really interesting minority.
Right.
They are
actually first African-American woman, not necessarily a Muslim. Yeah.
Right, but not, but on that court.
Okay.
Yeah. She, right now they're saying it's suicide. She was found with no apparent injuries. That's what I first read. And then, but some people are calling for Comey to investigate.
Yeah.
And see if something happened. It is kind of suspicious. She was sort of a standout for a judge, and you know, people are getting more and more violent. And you know, even I know I always bash him, but Trump kind of, you know, has always has bashed judges a couple times, and people take offense to that because judges are supposed to kind of be in an ivory tower there. They're not supposed to be allowed to be discussed. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, yeah. So very interesting mystery about this. We don't know what's going to happen. And wow.
So they found no signs of foul play or anything?
No, not yet. Wow. She was just on the shore.
Yeah.
Right now they're calling it an apparent suicide, but that could change so quickly. I also saw people calling for Comey to investigate. So it's really up in the air, but very scary and sort of odd, you know?
I know. Judges are like, you know, they're targets, you know, because there's a lot of haters.
Yeah, especially now. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So you wonder revenge of who hurt what, you know, who was, did some case happen? Did someone just want to make a statement?
Maybe Steve Bannon did it. I don't know.
Well, then Trump is really trying to distance himself from Bannon. So they go, Bannon, and he goes, yeah, I didn't even know him before. And they're like, you've known him since 2011. He's like, oh yeah, my bad. But he's really trying, I think, to get Bannon out of there because Ivanka and Jared want him out of there.
Oh good.
So family, so there you go.
So somebody's is thinking clearly, I
hopefully,
think.
Hopefully, yes.
Yeah.
Jared, the new president. Seems like he's the new president. At least he went to Jared's. That should be the slogan.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, during the Bush administration, I felt that Cheney was running the government.
You really think? We would call, in D.C., we'd call him president.
Really?
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That man had, like, 5 heart transplants. He was just, like, part another human cyborg. That man was terrifying. He still is.
Yeah.
He's got that sneer. He shot a man in the face. I still can't forget that. He shot his friend in the face while they were hunting quail.
Oh, well.
Anyway,
but I did. Anyway, one more thing. Okay, so we talked about the judge. So I wanted to. Well, I don't know. Okay, anyway, I'll tell you what. Let's get to our guest now because I was confusing something here with something else, and we have a lot to talk about. So we're joined by Daniel Brea. Welcome to the show, Daniel.
Woo-hoo! Hello. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Thank you for joining us. This was on short notice, but you introduced yourself to me, and I thought, yes, we got to have you in the studio. You're a filmmaker. You made an incredibly moving film, I think. I saw just the trailer for it. And so we want to discuss that and you. Have you been in L.A. a long time? Are you an L.A. native?
No, I've been in L.A. for about 9 years now.
Oh, okay, cool. And where did you move from?
I moved from Minneapolis in Minnesota to LA, but then before that I moved from Switzerland to Minneapolis and from Israel to Switzerland and from Switzerland.
So you're going sort of way back.
Wow. Okay. I wasn't expecting any of those.
I know. And he's
he was
going
like,
back in time,
Switzerland,
sort of like chronologically
that was awesome.
Reverse.
Yeah.
But so okay. So but where were you born then?
I was born in Minneapolis, but at 2 weeks old we moved. My parents got divorced and we moved to Europe, and then we moved to Israel.
2 weeks.
I see. Wow.
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 Yeah.
So you mean there are Jews in Minnesota?
He's the one.
Yeah, ironically, the film's premiere was in Minneapolis.
Yeah,
so it was like a full circle.
Because it's your hometown.
Yeah.
Wow, that's
it
cool.
It wasn't intentional, but that's how it happened.
That is very funny.
So, I mean, but so you obviously 2 weeks old, you don't remember living there.
No.
But then you moved back there later, right?
Yeah. My mom pretty much just had me so that I could have the passport.
Oh, okay.
So I was going to say, you have the great passport.
Right.
Yeah. Wow, sounds good. What do they call those, like, those kids that they bring here?
Smart? No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. No, they they give names for those that the parents that come here.
There is a name for that. I can't right? think of it right
they,
now.
During the elections, they were talking about it or something.
Yeah,
it'll come to me. But at any rate, that that was a good idea. So so she's got an American boy and everything.
Yeah.
So that's cool. Now, why did she pick Minnesota?
Well, to be fair, she was actually studying there, so it was right towards the end of her studies and the end of her relationship with my father as well. So it was a good time.
It was
to
a
get
new chapter. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
So they divorced just right after you were born?
Pretty much, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, that's what happened to my son, too. My,
wow.
Yeah, my daughter was about 4, but my son was like a year old. No, he was actually 6 months old when we separated.
Wow.
Yeah. So he doesn't remember living together. Wow. But then I got together with my ex so they could sort of like feel what it's like to be in the family. We tried for 3 years, didn't work.
Well, you gave it a shot.
Sometimes it's
better not to be together.
My mom tried, waited for 25 years and tried to get back together with him. And it lasted for about a year.
Oh, yeah.
Really? Wow, 20 years later.
Wow.
How amazing.
Yeah.
Do you have any siblings?
I have a sister and 2 half-brothers from my father's side.
Wow.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, but you do have older siblings from both your parents?
My sister is older. My 2 brothers are younger.
I see. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So, big family.
Yeah, big enough. My wife's family is huge. They're about 30 people. So.
Wow.
I have a very small family, and I was like, 30 people? Jeez.
Yeah. Really? So, I mean, if you count like her cousins and she has 4 sisters, so there are 5 girls at the house, so you can imagine what her father felt like having a wife
estrogen.
And 5 daughters.
Estrogen.
Exactly.
So you lived in Israel for how long?
It's a little bit, I can't really calculate, somewhere between probably like 7 to something years or so, enough to do the military and then just decide that I wanted to travel around a bit more.
Nice.
Yeah, that's what usually people do after the military, right?
Yeah, I gotta get out of here,
It is still my favorite place in the world, though. I just, you know, for my career, it's not the best place to be.
Right. So did you actually do some growing up there then?
I did from about 12 to 16, and then I went back later on to serve in the military.
So you did get quite an influence.
I got the high
Israel
school experience.
Yeah. Wow, pretty cool. Where in Israel did you live?
Ashkelon.
Oh,
so
really?
Right north of Gaza. So
there you go. Not the greatest place to be, but
well, when I hear Gaza, I just like duck.
It's a beautiful city.
But it's not Tel Aviv, right?
It's not Tel Aviv,
right.
But historically,
no place
it's
is Tel Aviv.
Nice. It's Samson and Delilah city, where story happens.
Right.
Wow.
It's very you know,
yeah, it was a Philistine town.
Wow.
Yeah. That's interesting. So so you have Israeli in you. That's cool. So you went back to the military and you did the service, actually.
Yeah, I did.
Wow, that's amazing. Why did you want to do that? Did you feel a certain closeness?
My
or?
Friends and everybody there were starting to go. I was actually a very problematic youth. I got involved in all kinds of bad things, and then I moved myself to Florida. I came back to the States when I was 16 by myself, so I didn't have a lot of supervision. But then, you know, I moved to Florida and
So from Israel to Florida?
To Minnesota, actually, and then to Florida.
Wow.
And I drove down there because I just got sick of the cold. And I got involved with some bad people, and then my life kind of like spiraled down, and I just realized that all my friends were going in the army, and I just thought, you know what, I don't feel right not going and doing this crazy stuff over here while they're all serving. Mm. So I just went. And it really helped focus.
It was the perfect time, I bet.
It does help you focus, right?
Oh, my God.
It makes you into a man, you know?
Yeah.
And plus, if you don't
or
go...
Or a woman, because women also go.
Yeah.
Right. But if you don't go, you can't really function in that society, right? You're not accepted.
Yeah, you can kind of sort of now, like, you know, get some kind of a tech job or something sometimes. But like, if you say I was in the military or I wasn't, it does make
a difference
when you get hired, and it does make a difference even what kind of job you get
and what pay.
And in society, how people view you too, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You mean you're like, you know,
ostracized a little bit at least socially. Yeah.
Right.
That's
I didn't know that.
When you live in a country that's surrounded by people that don't want you there, you kind of don't look so nice when you're not doing anything for that country.
Right,
you know?
Right. Everybody serves.
Exactly, and everybody serves. So everybody has a soldier or somebody in their family.
Yeah.
They expect you to do the same.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But so that's interesting. I came out here at 16 alone, too.
I was going to say, so did
what
Sam.
What an amazing story. You know?
Yeah, I was going to say, wow.
Yeah. Cool. So that's very cool. So... So you said, so you moved to Florida because that's where you felt you were...
It was hot.
It was warm, and that's what I heard was, you know, a nice place to be. So I just went
Did you have any family, friends there?
No, I had... Well, I went with a friend that I met in Minnesota that was from Florida. I actually went to high school in Minnesota for a year, and I didn't finish. But then, you know, I went to this program because apparently I have... A few brain cells, so I was accepted to a program where you do like the last year of high school and the first year of university in the same year. And I didn't like university at all, and so 6 months into it, I just, you know, I met this guy, and he was like, "I'm from Florida." And,
let's go.
I was like, "All right, let's go." I got in the car and drove down there.
Wow.
So when did film get involved in any of this?
When I was actually, film's been
the whole time
in my subconscious, like since I was a kid. I got my first camera when, well, my uncle had a camera when I was in Israel running around in the early 90s, but like, probably 12 or so, I shot like these stupid little short films in my grandma's apartment. And you know, I never thought of it as anything serious, especially after the army. I was like, oh, I'm gonna go, you know, Mossad or Shabak, you know, Shin Bet or something, I'm gonna keep that going. But then after the military, I just was kind of standing there and didn't know what to do. So I had a friend in Switzerland.
It's always just a guy that comes around and tells him what to do next.
Yeah, well, he was a friend of mine because all my friends were going, you know, and usually Israeli soldiers go to Thailand, India, places like that.
Right, right, South America.
South America. I didn't, you know, quite know where I was going to go. And then I got a phone call from an old buddy of mine in Switzerland. And he said, hey, you know, I'm, you know, Switzerland, like we're looking for a little bit of help kind of with my father's production company. I was like, ooh, production. I love making
Sounds
videos.
Good,
so
huh?
I went and kind of interned there, and wow. I basically started there.
So that's what drew you to Switzerland, then that opportunity,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Wow. How cool is that? So Damn. You sort of like get messengers, you know, dropped into your life.
Just in the right place. Which is why this documentary happened, too. I was just going about my happy life, and this guy, John, who was my neighbor in Ashkelon, the subject of the documentary, called me and said that this friend of his that used to be a skinhead with him back when he was, and I'm sure we'll explain the movie a little bit later. But,
of course.
Called him up, or actually messaged him through Facebook 25 years after an incident where they tried to kill this guy. And he said, hey, look, I want to meet you in Prague in Eastern Europe, and I want to go to concentration camps and stuff and talk about our past and make amends for it. And so, like, I got this weird message suddenly from John, the subject, and he was like, hey, you want to come to Eastern Europe and, you know...
So have you ever, like, this guy's a rabbit's foot up his ass, honestly. So people just come in to you and you just are open. Somehow your energy is open enough to receive it and you're okay to just drop everything and do it.
I'm a huge law of attraction guy.
Yeah,
I take
okay.
every opportunity that comes my way.
Wow.
And it's really led me down some crazy.
That's crazy.
Really?
Yeah, I just go with it.
Wow. I gotta be much more open. Like, if my husband's like, we're not going to Chili's, we're going to Applebee's, I'm like, no, we are going to Chili's, it's Tuesday. Not that we go to either, but I do like both.
So you like structured stuff,
kind of,
you don't
I
like
guess,
flexibility
I
or spontaneity?
Well, I used to be very spontaneous. I really did. And then, like, I hate to say it, but, like, I'm just, I when I look at him, I'm like so inspired because
right.
I feel like I was a little bit more, I mean, when I was in Europe for a year, I went to Switzerland, I stayed in at Interlaken at a drug commune. I mean, I did some weird shit, you know, I went to Oktoberfest in Munich and I just like stayed in some weird places and I don't do that. Now I'm like, I have to go to the valley. Like, it's so stupid. So anyway, it's inspiring.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But I think it's because some of the anxiety you've gained over the years, you know, where you say it's hard for you to do certain things.
But I was most depressed. You're right. It's come from that. It wasn't, for some reason, I was fine then, and now I can't. Right.
It's just that you have the anxiety now of little things that are like.
But I had it back then, too.
Really?
I still couldn't go to a CVS.
Yeah, wow.
But I could go to a Parisian pharmacy and speak French. Like, that makes no sense. I know.
Wow. I always think of it. Look, I always ask myself, what is actually, and I really think about it, what is actually the worst thing that could happen?
I know.
And then I just feel like, well, nothing that bad. And even if it's bad for me compared to the rest of the world, failed. My bad situation is not bad. My worst case scenario is I go broke, I lose everything, I have no money, I have to move back to Switzerland.
Darn.
Yeah. Oh, no. Oh, dear.
Well, you don't go far enough. I mean, for me, it's like I'll be stuck in an elevator during an earthquake and nobody will know I'm there. That's the worst that could happen to
me. Mine is that a whale will eat me. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense, people. It makes no sense.
While you're on dry land.
Literally, why is the whale there? Right. Yeah, exactly.
Isn't that funny how people have different fears and stuff?
You know, my God.
It's amazing. Wow. Yeah.
Yes.
So this is cool. So Switzerland, what was that like? Where in Switzerland?
Close to Zurich, a small town called Baden. Actually, a very historical. It's I love that place. It's one of my favorite cities in the world. It's got a lot of Roman baths. It has an old town, you know, where the buildings are, you know, 12th century and like really old downtown. And yeah, it was nice growing up there. It's very quiet.
Yeah.
And it is very one organized.
Probably
clean.
My favorite country in Europe. It's I had so one of the best. Now, granted, I wasn't a drug commune in Interlaken, but when I went up to the Alps, it was just the best feeling in the world. I've never seen sky that blue or breathed air that good. I went to a Hooters and there was cows roaming around.
Let's just put it this way: they have the homeless people there are so well taken care of. That even junkies that do heroin and stuff can go to a government office and get their heroin shots
get
there.
Fixed, yep. Right?
Yeah. And with safe shots.
Yeah. So they prevent this whole like spreading of AIDS and all this kind of stuff just by doing little things like that. And that's kind of the thinking that I really appreciate about the Swiss.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah. And the Swiss are like very, I think they're very warm, very hospitable, right? I mean, because like in Switzerland, it's divided into three parts, right? The French, the German, and the Italian.
There's actually one more very small part called the Romansh, which is it's 1% of the Swiss population, and they have kind of almost gypsy-ish kind of
The Roma in Italy.
They're not exactly Roma, they're Romansh. Like, it's something else. I'm not exactly sure, but there's this one little group of Swiss that gets forgotten.
What do you guys do?
That's pretty cool. So you got involved in the production there, right? So did you get some experience?
I started just by, you know, my friend basically took me in and taught me how to edit and then basically gave me a TV show right away and just kind of looked over my shoulder and said, here, edit this and here's what you need to do. It was kind of a talk show type thing for German television. And
was that before digital or was it already digital?
It was digital? On the cusp. It was before. It was still, I mean, it was like digital tape, you know?
Right,
it was
exactly.
Tape, though it wasn't.
So you would maybe you did some editing in digital on the computer, and then you had to transfer it to tape, right?
Well, we'd have to actually take the tapes. Yeah, that was such a
crazy. Right. I remember. And you couldn't move video in real time on computers back then, right?
And from your camera, everything that you shot, you would have to play it back to
in real
capture
time?
It, log and capture onto your computer. You would digitize it that way, and then you would put it back on tape.
on tape, you'd lose all the quality.
It's a long time, my friend.
Yeah, and then the transition was even more terrible than that, but what can you do, you know? Today we're working with like unbelievably video high definition.
I took a slow-mo of my dog jumping over a rock and it was
beautiful.
I just got a drone for $1,000.
Wow.
It's nothing.
Oh, you
it's
did.
This big, it folds up, it fits in a fanny pack, you pull out the thing.
Oh, I saw the one on Facebook.
It's DJI Mavic. It is 4K. It goes like 500 feet up in the air. It goes 4 miles away from you. It keeps a 1080p like picture on your phone.
1080.
You can do hand gestures and it'll take a picture of you. It just knows like if you want to do like selfie mode, it can follow you.
It'll follow you.
It can go and I'm like, this is like straight
Minority Report.
Yeah. You have an Apple Watch too. I was like,
right.
James Bond era is here.
Exactly. Talking to our watches.
Yeah. We
Dick
got
Tracy.
Maps on here. We're like, tell them what to do. Hey, schedule me, you know, this and that.
Damn.
And now the drones, it's like.
It's unbelievable.
It's crazy.
It's really unbelievable. But the drone will come in handy for your filmmaking,
100%,
huh? Isn't that awesome?
For filmmaking and spying on neighbors.
Yeah, exactly. Come on now.
Except they already have laws against
exactly,
that. Right?
Yeah.
So you can't
do that.
Oh,
man.
Yeah, by then you'll get the footage, right?
Exactly. I live in North Hollywood. The cops don't come up that far.
Right.
too
but
far.
You know, that's a class of a drone that you have to register, actually. So
is it really?
Yes, okay, yes. I go should. Online and just find.
He does. He's done it.
Just Google registering a drone, because really, you don't want to like be outside the law either. You
that's
know?
Very so. True.
Very good point,
very
Sam.
True.
Thank you. That's a good point.
But unfortunately, you can't do this around neighbors. You have to be like in an open area, you know. So everybody pretty much has the same footage of the beach, of the desert,
right.
of things like that. But when you make a movie, it's a whole different thing.
Yeah, you get your permits and
right, exactly.
Whatever.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah. And we'll get to your movie. We're talking to Daniel Brea, who is a filmmaker, and he made the movie called Escape from Room 18.
I love that name.
Just the name makes me...
That's exactly right. I'm like, well, what's in Room 18?
Exactly. What's happening there? Why do people want to escape
from
there, that's, right?
It tells a sentence in a story, doesn't it? Jesus.
It's a bit of a metaphor, kind of. I don't know if you're familiar with the internment camp Theresienstadt. It's a
not
place
that
in,
one. No, I'm not familiar with that one. Where was it?
That was in Prague, in the Czech Republic, and it was basically used by the Nazis to make their propaganda videos and show people how actually nice their camps were for like Red Cross and all these organizations.
Really?
So there's plumbing and there's kind of heatings and all that stuff. But if you look under the sinks, there's no actual pipes or anything.
Wow.
It's just for show.
Right.
So in that camp, there is a room, Room 18, that we didn't... at first, the movie was going to be called Headstrong, which is the guy's nickname that the movie's about. But we got to this room, Room 18, and 18, as you know, in Hebrew...
It's very important.
If you,
it's life, right?
It means life.
Right, numerically, right.
It's very important also, like, all the divisions and multiplications of 18. 36.
Right. That's what people do when they give gifts.
Yeah,
stuff.
They give money.
So there's a very significant, you know, role for that number in Judaism.
Right.
But also for the Nazis, 18 means something. The first letter of the alphabet is A, and the eighth letter is H, Adolf Hitler. So in their terms, neo-Nazi skinheads now use the number 18 a lot to represent Adolf Hitler.
I didn't know that.
So, and ironically, in Terezin, Room 18 was the room where the dead bodies that were tortured were stored.
Wow.
So...
And you actually went there?
We went there, yeah. And then we went to Auschwitz after that. And to have, I tell you what, just so that the audience knows what we're even talking about.
Right, exactly. And that's why I want to get to the film later, right. Because we're jumping around.
Okay,
so, and you got into the film. I want to give it its own due time.
Okay.
But we need to know how you got to this film first, okay?
Yeah.
So, all right, so let's go back a little bit. I mean, this sounds fascinating, right?
Yeah.
We're going to talk about the Holocaust, the Nazis, and neo-Nazism as well, right?
Yeah, which is
so wow. You've taken on something pretty big, and I want to know how you ended up with that.
This is the neighbor. Yeah, I was a youth in Ashkelon, probably right before I left, around 15 years old or so. And there was a guy, a very kind of odd-looking kind of guy with a backpack that always walked up and down. He was definitely American, you know. And my mom had recognized him from an article that she read in Jerusalem Post. And basically... saying that was some guy that had something to do with neo-Nazis, and he was now living in Israel. He was a Jewish neo-Nazi. So I started talking to the guy then as a kid, because it was fascinating to me that, you know, at that point I had realized that he was a Jew, grew up in southern Florida, got involved in a neo-Nazi organization. They found out he was Jewish. He rose to power quite high there.
Wow.
And they found out he was Jewish. They tried to kill him. That turned into one of the first kind of hate crimes in southern Florida that then really helped get the Hate Crimes Act going. But he fled to Israel because he put all these people in prison, basically. And they were threatening his life. So he went to the Jewish agency and basically got a pass to go to Israel, and has been there ever since. And that's...
And how old was he at the time? You were 15. How old was he?
He was probably double my age. He was probably around 32 or something like that.
I see.
In this kind of...
So you just walked up to him and started talking to him? I mean, how did that all...
Yeah, like I said, I was kind of a weird, problematic kid. So people that were involved in gangs and things were
really
very attractive to
me,
you know? Nazi kind of.
Yeah, you like that. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I was like, how do I become like you? Not in a neo-Nazi way, but in a like gang member kind of way.
Right.
The skinhead thing was a little bit puzzling.
That's, did he have a shaved head?
He kind of kept it short, but at that point he had already been, it was already 17 years since the incidents or something. It was 1991 that it happened and he had fled. So he had been there for a while. He definitely has, you know, made a 180 degree turn. He's actually a practicing, you know, he walks around with a kippah, a yarmulke. He's definitely regrets, you know, everything that he's done. And he was 16 at the time. So, you know, we've all done stupid things. I don't think he really knew the meaning of what he was doing when right. he was that age.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that he got recruited into this organization.
Yeah, you can get brainwashed into that thing too.
Well, it was started as a non-racist skinhead group in a small town. They were non-racist skinheads called Sharp Skins, Skins Against Racial Prejudice. And this American Front, this very big American neo-Nazi organization, was starting to take over all these little splinter cells, all these little like satellite groups, and were forcefully absorbing them, saying, look, you guys are skinheads, racist, non-racist, we don't care. You're under us now, basically. Or, you know, try us, you know, see what we're going to do. So he didn't think the best idea at the time was to advertise, hey, I'm Jewish, I'm not going to be part of you.
Right.
He kind of went with it and figured, well, at some point I'll get out of it. And then he realized, well, I don't believe in these ideologies, but, you know, the sense of power, he was bullied a lot, he was picked on, so Gabriella would appreciate his story.
Right.
But he got picked on a lot and beat up, and the only people that were behind him were these skinheads. And so he thought, well, maybe they're not so bad.
Right.
And he started.
You can see how somebody can sort of like spiral into something.
Snowballs,
like that,
absolutely.
Right.
When you have no one on your side and these guys are tough and mean and they're on your
100%.
Side. And it's, you know, that's who you go to.
It's exactly. super relevant now, even with, I mean, because it's the exact same way that terrorists get recruited in a sense. Mm-hmm. They go for the downtrodden and the weak. And they tell them that they're going to get all this stuff and they're going to be great and they're going right. to be, you know.
And get the virgins and 72 virgins.
Yeah, you'll be a hero thing. And you're nothing now. You'll be a national hero. Don't you right. want to be a hero? You're not going to die.
And,
like it's,
and they be often, a martyr,
and they,
right.
Right, and they often go after lonely or people isolated.
Yeah,
and right. It's the same exact thing.
It's the
right.
same thing.
Right,
so
and reject.
It's a very dangerous mentality.
Yeah. Right, yeah. And that's where you go. You know, and these people, it's like, it just seems so... logical that they would do this. You know, you're a kid, you're impressionable.
You're 16, that's right when you want to.
Right. You know, you find someone who's on your side, you're like, yeah, what the hell? Yeah.
You have a father who was, his father was a gang member in New York at, before. There was spousal abuse at home. His mother was getting beat up all the time by his dad. His brother was an alcoholic. Like, the whole family was exactly what
he
you would expect.
He was primed for something like that.
100%. Yeah. So you can't really blame the guy.
Right.
Because you've never walked in those shoes, really.
No, it's hard to judge him.
Yeah,
really,
right.
You know. So did he? He was the one who reached out to you about.
He gained a whole new level of respect for me when he heard about my, or when he saw that I came back to do the military service, and also the kind of service I did was in a special forces unit for Golani, and. Mm-hmm. He really admired that because he always wanted to be in a legitimate kind of militia. You know, he was in his own little neo-Nazi thing, but he always kind of wanted to be in the Marines or in an Israeli.
Probably wanted to have a gun and shoot people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's probably what the motivation.
Yeah, I mean, what else, you know?
I just want the brotherhood.
Yeah, I don't think it's the patriotism in him, you know?
I think you're touching on something, though.
Yeah,
the brotherhood is
brotherhood.
Definitely, if you, on a serious note, like that's probably what motivates, you know, him. And a lot of us, that sense of belonging to a bigger, a more important kind of community. So basically, he appreciated what I was doing. So we started, you know, really discussing things a lot with each other and sharing experiences. And then he basically reached out to me because he was actually scared that this was another attempt on his life because this guy was involved with those people back in the day. He hasn't talked to him for 25 years. So it's weird to get this guy, and people don't know that Prague, Czech Republic, is actually a hotspot for skinheads and neo-Nazis.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and so he felt like he was getting lured into another trap, and so we made sure that there were a lot of security arrangements put in place. My uncle deals in security, and also he felt more safe with me, I guess, having, you know, been, and not that I could do anything against a gang of neo-Nazis in Prague, but like I guess it was a sense of security he got.
Because
you'd
been in the
military,
the special forces.
Yeah, so at least there would be one guy to watch his back, you know,
right.
if something happened. So I agreed. Yeah. I said, you know what, you know, either way, no matter what the outcome, this is going to be interesting to capture on film. And it was
So that's amazing. So you decided to undertake this particular thing. Was this the first thing then that you did? That's like this? I mean, right? Because you were editing before.
Yeah,
that.
I was editing. I was filming. I was doing a little bit of producing for small, like, short films. And I've never really worked on a proper... I mean, I'd worked on feature film sets before, but I hadn't produced anything or directed anything.
It was a big topic to take on.
Oh, yeah.
It is, right?
Well, I would have been like, A Bug's Life. I would have done that.
We were developing a script for the story of his life, actually, on a separate arrangement already a while ago. I had bought his life rights a few years back just because I thought it was interesting and you know, I was going to develop this script about it. But then this came up and kind of all the attention kind of shifted to that because we were like, well, why make up a story if we got the real deal and we can go film it, you know?
Right.
And who can say that they got to take two ex-neo-Nazis to a concentration camp and to really make them face... or put them in front of what they were preaching. Not that they were doing those things exactly the way the Nazis were, but what they were preaching, to see that,
right.
And to see the reactions.
And the results of something, of their actions, you know, and like the consequences of what they were doing.
Right.
Now, I looked at the trailer, and the film, by the way, we are talking to Daniel Brea. He's the producer, the director of the film. The film is called Escape from Room 18, and this has to do with an ex-neo-Nazi fled to Israel. Now, so this film, it's a documentary.
Yes.
That's what it is. Are there? I noticed there's some reenactments, though, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tell us how that went about. I mean, that's interesting, right?
Yeah.
You're dealing with truth, and yet you have to recreate it.
Right. Now, the reenactments, the way I did it, and that was one of the things I spent a lot of time thinking about. I didn't want it to be this kind of cheesy... historical documentary.
Right.
Kind of
yeah,
the
you've
narrator
seen those.
And stuff.
Hark, thou art thee.
Right.
Yeah.
So
right.
You wanted to tell his story.
Right. So what I tried to do, the reenactments are not really reenactments. They're more these kind of sub, you know, like the unrealistic kind of trippy kind of flashes to things. So there's like, you know, there's these... Let's say John's talking about, you know, beating some kid up when he's giving a story about the stuff that they used to do. So
right.
There's these... okay, there is one scene where we actually did a reenactment of somebody getting beat up pretty much. That's the only one that looks like it's actually a normal
right.
like reenactment. The rest of them are all these kind of like... it's hard to describe. It's very...
Trippy's good.
Trippy.
Yeah. It's, but you have to make it some kind of stylized.
It's very stylized.
It's stylized.
Yeah.
Otherwise, what are you going to... It looks
right.
totally cheesy.
Now, here's the justification for that is that John has... the subject of the documentary has suffered a very big brain tumor, and the suspicion is that it comes from the beating because he's kicked in the head quite a bit. So he has a big part of his brain missing, and he's been on a lot of medication over the years. And also the inner workings of his mind are very different to other people's.
Wow.
And so though it's kind of a visualization of his inner
brain.
It's kind
That's
of a
awesome.
Dark, odd, jumpy kind of environment. So it doesn't make too much sense, but it helps convey the message.
Yeah.
So you're not just looking at a talking head.
It's basically. Like Big Little Lies, to be honest, that the French director, when I watched it, he would do flashes of stuff that was like way out of weird left field.
Right.
But it get you the visceral feeling of it.
I appreciate the comparison.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I live
good.
Up to that
Yeah,
level,
you do. Totally.
Wow, very cool. So Early on, so now how did you do this? Was this like on a shoestring? Were you able to raise some money?
I was able to get some help from some Jewish community members here. We had a little bit of donation money, and then I also found an investor, my producer partner found an investor that's actually a female, a young lady that's actually of Muslim origin. And so that really helped kind of like unify the whole thing and make it just really diverse. Like we've had a lot of support from Christians as well. So it's becoming this kind of film that not just for the Jewish
it's a universal topic. You're talking about hatred and all this kind of stuff.
It couldn't be more relevant too.
Right.
How do you feel about the whole, now that I just have to ask about the whole Sean Spicer calling like concentration camps Holocaust centers?
Yeah.
It just, I was so interested to hear that, because then when you were on the, I knew you were coming on the show, I was like, oh man, I just got to find out. Just insensitive.
I've never been a fan of renaming things.
Yeah, like, yeah.
I think they were concentration camps.
No one ever
they
calls
took
them that,
everybody
yeah.
and concentrated everyone there. They were work camps.
Yeah.
Concentration camps, death camps. Yeah, you can call them those. Yeah. I don't know about
Holocaust centers.
Holocaust centers. That's what we go to today.
That's what I thought.
To remember.
Like the memorials.
Yeah, that's a Holocaust center to me.
Right.
Not
that's
the
what,
actual.
That's what we were thinking also, right?
Just so bizarre that that's where his brain went.
It might be the truth in that case.
He might not know. Or that's exactly right. Anyway, sorry.
I don't know. It is a cast of characters up there right now.
Yeah, for sure.
So, but we digress.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Let's go back to real times. If you guys want to see the trailer for Escape from Room 18, you can go to Vimeo and just search for Escape from Room 18.
Or go to
If you Google it, where else?
Breafilms.com.
Okay,
cool. Breafilms.com. The trailer's up there.
Sounds good. How did you get the name Brea?
Brea was my mother's maiden name. And ironically, I love using it here because...
La Brea.
Because of Brea and La Brea and the city
we
of Brea.
We have a city of Brea and La Brea, so people can remember it,
right?
Yeah. That's pretty cool. Yeah, because I thought maybe it's La Brea thing.
I should have been called Tori Wilshire. Tori La Cienega.
Yeah.
Think about adding the La to the name.
Yeah. Daniel La Brea.
Or Sam Sunset or something.
Loving that. Sunset. That's your porn name right there.
What
Sam
is it? You're supposed
Sunset.
To pick
your first pet.
The first
and
pet?
The first street you lived on.
Oh, then I'd be Butch Hacklerstrasse. So I don't know if that would work.
That would work so well.
In Europe, it would
work
great.
You'd be like a certain kind of porn. I'm Scampy Allendale.
Well.
Oh, wow.
So how many languages do you speak?
I think fluently.
At least understand.
I speak fluently Hebrew and English and German and Swiss
German.
German
too,
like,
right?
Yeah, so the High German and the Swiss German are actually two completely different things that people forget. Like German is not at all like Swiss German. So there's two dialects within German that I speak, and then all my like French and Spanish is kind of anybody else's.
It's hard to take in more than that, you know. I mean,
are
unless
you kidding?
You're
that's
like
enough.
Really young.
Jesus.
Yeah. Some people I can't understand how they know like eight languages, you know, and,
my mother.
And inside
really?
Out.
Really? Your mom sounds very smart.
Yeah, she's a language teacher. She basically knows that. Because I have an international family. My grandmother and from my mother's side is from Finland. Her father is from Argentina with roots in Sicily and Calabria. And my father's side is Polish and Austrian, I think. And then if you go far enough back on my mother's side, you get all the way to Persia. So like the diversity of the family is definitely there. So we've had to. Like our holidays were oftentimes... you know, held in three different
several
languages.
You are the human being of the earth. Wow. You are Mother Nature. That's incredible.
Wow. So now let's talk a little bit about the distribution of the film. You told me that you're going on the festival run and stuff.
We're having mixed, honestly... I'd just be straight up honest here because I know everybody needs to pretend like, you know, things are blowing up. people that have accepted and seen the film have left. If you go on IMDb, like it's ridiculous. After this one first festival, wow. There's already 12 or 14 ratings, and there it's at like
16 and 9.2.
Wow. 9.2, which is a really high rating, but a lot of places are reluctant to even screen it because of the subject matter.
Right.
And that's where we've been running into a little bit of
hiccups,
because there was, I don't know if you remember, there was this wave of threats to Jewish community centers and stuff.
Only like a month or two ago, yeah.
Right. And it happened, I don't know if you heard, but it ended up being a kid
in
Israel.
An Israeli kid.
That was doing all doing these threats, yeah. Which is ridiculous. But that was when we were submitting to a lot of places, and they were very, very scared of neo-Nazis showing up and things like that. And a lot of people didn't take us for that reason.
Wow.
It's not surprising, because you yourself said what a topic, what a heavy controversial topic.
Oh yeah.
And so it's not surprising you would have but you took it on. You know, you had the. You had the kahunas, okay?
The chutzpah.
I just thought it was too good of a opportunity to just say, you know what, I'm just going to stay in LA.
I'm okay.
And I'll just keep working on the script. No, like, let's go out there and live some life. I mean, it was a crazy...
How long is the film?
It's just an hour. I had a 90-minute cut, and I trimmed it down. I'm starting to be of the mindset that shorter is better, and just get the information.
It is,
and
we've spoken to a lot of short filmmakers, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
They said that's where most people are headed nowadays.
Yeah, and today people don't want to sit through a three-hour epic anymore.
That's true, right? Yeah. We don't have that attention span.
I can't
all.
Even sit through this. Jesus. No, I'm kidding. No, I'm kidding.
So, but you do manage to... So how are you going to distribute the film at this point? Let us know where can people see it.
Okay, so as of right now, we're still negotiating a couple of deals. We're talking to a couple of companies that, you know, some Israeli based, some just Jewish content, some bigger distribution companies, but we're having a little bit of trouble finding the perfect company that can also help us distribute it into the campuses and the universities and things like that. We're trying to find somebody that can kind of push it down mainstream media, but then also, you know, get it on Netflix and all of those places, and then also have educational dedicated screenings at Jewish community centers, Christian community centers, and universities and places like that.
You need to get to the influencers, you know.
I need somebody.
I was just thinking that. You need someone young and someone who, you're right, who has a lot of social media following, who's an influencer. That's exactly right.
Yeah, and not only that, but in their communities too, you know, like rabbis, you know, whatever you have.
Teachers.
People that people look up to.
Absolutely. Right.
And they will tell them, here, this is a cool film. You
so
know?
Now so, anybody who wants to have a screening at this point in time, we're doing festivals and screenings. So we've had a couple of screenings and we've had a couple of, you know, festivals take us. Our next festival is going to be in Moscow in September.
Wow.
But basically what we want to do is also get John and Kevin, the subjects of the documentary, there. John's a public speaker, so we would like to do a screening of the film. We're doing something with Yachad, which is a Jewish group for adolescents, and Hillel, that maybe we're going to do screenings for young Jewish kids and then show the movie and have John come out and myself and talk about it. And so anybody who is listening now that would like to do something like that, please, you know, contact us. And then also anybody who knows, you know, about this kind of unconventional means of distribution, that would be a lot of help, too.
So is that the target market, really, the Jewish community?
I think the target market is everybody, because everybody's dealing with something like this in some form at this point in time, I feel like, or at least aware of it, because you can
but you do seem to focus on colleges and universities where you want to get into, so that's a segment of the market. Let me tell you one thing. The last thing you ever want to do is this is for everybody, because if you do, then you can't focus, you know, because everybody is for everybody. It's like you need to stand out. You need to stand out somehow in the market. You need to be able to say, I'm different. I'm not. So think about how you can be different, how you can stand out. And
what about Hillel? What about Hillel? Isn't that a college run? I mean, I was supposed to go to Hillel and I never did. But isn't that nationwide?
Right. But he wants to show it to non-Jews as well.
Yeah, I know.
But what I'm saying is within all that community, maybe, yeah, focus on colleges or something, you know, by design or something. So they'll help you focus a little bit, you know. So go from one group to the other.
That's a good point.
But,
yeah,
because let me tell you, if one thing I know about is marketing, you know, because that's all the shit I read about. And, you know, and for years I have, you know. So so that's why I'm saying it's hard because not everybody's the same. So your message is going to be lost with a lot of people that are not even interested.
Right.
You know, so you want to go after the people that will probably be interested and figure out how, you know, like opinion leaders and influencers, like in the media, you know, like in college media, whatever, whoever covers colleges. But remember, colleges are very leftist, so you have to. So it's kind of like you want to widen your audience, maybe, you know.
Sure.
I don't know.
Sure. Yeah, we've had a lot of issues really with even just getting the ball rolling on it. As soon as people hear Jewish neo-Nazi,
it's tough.
You know, a lot of Jewish people want to kind of, even some of the people who put money into the project don't actually want their names on it because they're a little bit reluctant because they don't want to sound like maybe, oh, I support, you know, somebody who did something like that. If you watch the movie, I think you might walk away with a bit of a different perspective, but it's tricky.
Tough.
Yeah.
It's a hard one to start with, you know, but but you gotta go with the ones that really speak to you.
Yeah.
But inevitably, what it does is when people do watch it, it sparks a lot of conversation. Most people cry and they talk about it afterwards. Whether you like John and the subject matter or not, whether you believe his story or not,
you managed
they talk
to,
about
to squeeze some tears out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome. Listen, there's so much more to talk about, but we're totally out of time. Daniel Brea, tell people where they can find you. Where they can see the trailer again.
Sure. Please, go to BreaFilms.com, BREAFilms.com, and you can find me on Instagram at the Daniel Brea, BREA.
That's
good. Sounds good. Yeah. Well, Daniel, you're very inspiring.
Thank you.
You know, I mean, you've taken on a big, huge thing, I think, you know, an undertaking, and you deserve the best. You've created, so this is finished now, right? I mean,
it's
this
a done
is
thing.
A done thing.
We're just,
so all you have to do now is dedicate your life to making
it. Getting it out there.
As a filmmaker starting out, everybody's like, oh yeah, make your first movie. Nobody says, oh, once it's done.
Right?
What
honey,
do you do
what
then?
Are you gonna do with
honey
the movie?
Bear? I hear you.
But that's with everything. Right. I gotta tell you, you know, you gotta. But a work of art is something that you do without thinking, will people want to buy it?
Right.
You
right.
just do it because it's art. That's what you want to do.
Exactly. You know what? It's timeless. It's there. It's made. It's not going away. So.
There you go. Daniel Brea, thank you again for joining us. All the best to you. Tori, thanks as always.
Anytime.
And we'll see everybody tomorrow.
Thank you.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.